Hi, this is Jerome Gilmartin, JMJ Catholic Radio, bringing local and EWTN Catholic programming to northeastern and central Pennsylvania. Welcome to the In the Father's Hands program with host Mary-Kate Grady. Mary-Kate's guest today is Colleen Carol Campbell, award-winning author, print and broadcast journalist, former presidential speechwriter, and public speaker. And her first book, The New Faithful, Why Young Adults Are Embracing Christian Orthodoxy, was featured in more than 100 articles, including The Washington Post and Wall Street Journal. Her second, My Sisters the Saints, also award-winning, was followed by her latest book, The Heart of Perfection, How the Saints Taught Me to Trade My Dream of Perfection for God's. And that book won the 2020 Catholic Press Association Book Award. Remarkable success for any author. Colleen has appeared on several popular news programs, and she hosted her own program on EWTN-TV and radio for 8 years. Colleen and her husband live in Central California, where she homeschools their 4 children. Mary-Kate?
Thank you so much, Sherry, and we welcome you all back again to our program. We're so happy to be with you all today, as always. Just as a reminder, you can always listen to JMJ Catholic Radio on 750 AM, 98.9 FM, and of course you can listen to it online as well. Just go to jmj750.com. That's jmj750.com. And this program, In the Father's Hands, can also be found on podcast. If you just go into Google, type in the Father's Hands podcast, you can bring it up on that. Also, if you listen through the radio on Saturday evenings, Sunday afternoons, In the Father's Hands broadcast airs live. So let us go ahead today, open our Bibles to the Gospel of St. John, chapter 10, verses 27, where Jesus tells us, "My sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me, and I give them eternal life, and they shall never perish, and no one shall snatch them out of my hand. My Father, who has given them to me, is greater than all, and no one is able to snatch them out of the Father's hand. I and the Father are one." And I always like to carry this quote with me throughout the week, as I encourage all of our listeners to always remember that the Father's holding you in his hand, especially in those moments of confusion or doubt or kind of feel like you lost your way. Always remember the Father's holding you in his hands. You can always reread that verse in the 10th chapter of St. John, verses 27. And we're so pleased today to have Colleen Carol Campbell join us. Colleen, thanks so much for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me, Mary-Kate.
And Colleen, let's jump right into asking you, as I do all my guests. I think it's the hardest question because everybody has a hard time making this decision, but what would be your favorite scripture quote, and why does it mean so much to you?
Gosh, well, it is a tough one, and I love what you just quoted. My late father, whom I wrote about a lot, his struggle with Alzheimer's in My Sisters the Saints, that was a phrase he always came back to, is we're all in God's hands, and he really clung to that throughout his 12-year journey through Alzheimer's. It helped me in my own journey through infertility, and that's just a beautiful quote. So there are many beautiful quotes, but again, citing my father, one of his favorites that became a favorite of mine was Romans 8:28, "For I know that all things work together for good for those who love God and who are called according to his purposes." And that's always been one that has anchored me in good times and bad, and in those confusing times when they're not quite good or bad, you just don't quite know where you're headed what's this going to turn into. And that's just that reminder, very much like the one you opened the show with, that God's got it figured out, and he's got a place for, you know, he can make good out of anything, even our mistakes. And that has really helped me and helped me in my struggles to trust God, that Romans 8:28.
Absolutely. That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. I don't know how you couldn't like that one. I have to admit, Colleen, that's been a favorite one for several of my guests. Out of all the scripture votes, that's probably been the one that's been repeated the most. So,
oh, interesting. I'm not original, yes. But at least I'm.
Well, no, I think it's catching on to a theme here, though. I'm catching on to a theme of a theme of the need for trust. You know, we want to trust God. We need to have that assurance that whatever's going on in their life is not just random. There's a plan here, you know?
Yes, that's right. That's right.
So what I like to ask my guests, kind of a general question, but just I like to ask how they've experienced God in their life. You know, I guess for different people, Colleen, you know, maybe they were raised in their faith, and for other people, maybe it just came at a certain point in time. You know, maybe you had an experience or something. Maybe just share with us a little bit about, you know, the role God has played in your life. You know, where have been some times where you really felt the Father holding you in His hands?
Yeah. Well, I was raised Catholic in a very strong Catholic home. So my parents were both strong Catholics and raised my brother and I with the faith. And, you know, I did feel we had a pretty good handle on our faith. I mean, there's always more we're learning. And as I raise children, there's more I learn and think, gosh, I wish I knew this when I was younger. But but at least for the time and place we were in, I did feel pretty well informed on the most important parts of our faith, which I give thanks to God for that, because I know that wasn't often the case sometimes, even with my peers in Catholic school. Sure. I did go through Catholic schools all the way. And, you know, so God was always part of my life. My Catholic faith was always important to me. But like everyone, I went through kind of ebbed and flowed. I would say when I was home with my parents, it was an important part of my life. I'm not sure I'd completely embraced the faith as my own. I mean, I sure. wasn't rebelling in any way. I just probably hadn't had that, you know, full adult embrace of it. And then I went to college, Marquette University in Wisconsin, Catholic Jesuit school. And you know, I loved it. I loved the things I was doing, and I was very busy and very focused on success and status, having a good time. You know, I kept going to Mass every Sunday, never missed Mass, but I was just kind of checking the boxes, especially toward the end of my college years. And as I wrote about My Sisters the Saints, my second book is a memoir that kind of describes my spiritual journey in a lot more detail. But the upshot is around the end of my college years, I began to feel a real emptiness and kind of a, you know, is this all the faith is? You know, just trudging to Mass for, you know, maybe a half hour on Sunday. I was going to the drive-through Mass, as we called it, and, you know, living it to the extent of not, you know, doing the things I thought were really egregious, but really not the spirit of, you know, how can I grow closer to God? How can I, you know, do His will and turn my life completely over to Him. So that was the beginning, that sort of itch, that restlessness. It came around my junior year of college. And from there, there's, you know, again, lots of ups and downs, but I would say I began to really begin to seek God my senior year in college, very clandestinely. Didn't want my friends to think I'd become a religious nut. They, I mean, they were good Catholic kids, but like a lot of Catholic kids, we were surrounded by the, you know, very compartmentalized lives, just like I was leading. And and then after I graduated from college, my journalism career got going in earnest. My background's heavily in the secular print and broadcast media, so that was really where I got my start and kind of cut my teeth. And actually, it was moving to Memphis, Tennessee to take my first newspaper job right out of college. I didn't know anyone. I was a one-woman bureau in Collierville, Tennessee, which was the fastest-growing city in the state at the time. So I got to cover all sorts of things. It was great for my resume, but it was so boring for a young woman just out of college to live you know, all alone in an apartment in suburbia with no one I knew. I wasn't from the South, so you could tell from my accent I didn't fit in. I was Catholic in a place that was largely not Catholic. And so, you know, what I really did is I began to dig into all these books my parents had been giving me through the years that I hadn't read, spiritual books, and a lot of them books about the saints. And through that senior year of college, that first year out of college, and then the several years that followed that, when I even moved up to St. Louis, Missouri, to bigger paper and where my family was at that point, it was really, for me, a lot of it a reading journey with the saints, and particularly the women saints, where reading their lives, first Teresa of Avila, then Teresa of Lisieux, and on, where I began to see my own desires and struggles reflected in their lives. And I began to have a whole new vision of what my life could be, what the faith could be, and how exciting and liberating it could be to live as a Catholic woman in the world, instead of to live by the script the world gives us. That was the beginning of my journey. And then from there, many other twists and turns along the way. But that was really when the faith started to become my own in a very intentional way.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of, you know, with you traveling around and meeting all sorts of different people and your different, you know, as Jerry gave your resume, all the different jobs you've done, you know, in your journalism, on TV, working for the White House, you know, you're around all sorts of different people. How did you hang on to your faith there, Colleen, through, you know, all these different places, all these secular places where maybe God wasn't important to people, they didn't know anything about him, or they had ideas about Catholics or Christians? How did you hang on to that?
Yeah, that was a real struggle. I would say mostly in my 20s, as a single woman, I mean, secular journalism is very secular. I mean, you know, there was a big study in the 80s surveying journalists' views on religion, politics, social issues, and they were, you know, way, way, way on the extreme on almost everything. I mean, the percentage of atheists alone, it was upwards more than 90%, I think, in secular newsrooms. So, it was a very stark difference. And, you know, as a young woman, I wanted to, get along with my colleagues and be accepted, sure, in a certain sense. But I also could feel the stress and the pressure of being different, especially when we'd have to cover bad news in the church. That was often very painful. And so that's compartmentalizing my faith a lot still. And for me, the real breakthrough when I started to see some real progress and feel less alone is when I really made in finding Catholic friends an intentional part of my life. Again, I'd gone to Catholic schools. I had friends who were Catholic, but they were kind of Catholic, like I was Irish or they were German or whatever.
Sure,
it was a cultural identity. You know, we kind of had some fundamental values in common. But it was only, I would say, in my mid-20s when I started to seek friendships with people who were seeking holiness, who were as on fire as I wanted to be, that I started to feel less compartmentalized and feel more emboldened to be who I was without apology. And, you know, for me, there was another series of, I guess you'd call them mini conversion experiences or reconversions to prayer and different experiences. You know, one was a conference at Steubenville. I remember being at a healing mass in St. Louis. I had an experience at a different conference in Wisconsin. Just these moments when I could really feel Jesus reaching out, touching me in the heart, not just the head, which for me was an important part of my journey. And then making me really want to be with people who loved him, which made it easier to let go of the friendships and relationships with people who didn't. Not because they were awful people, but because, you know, as Teresa of Avila says, there's no standing still in the spiritual life. You're either moving forward toward God or you're slipping back away from him. And I didn't want to just keep treading water. I wanted to start moving forward. And then, of course, meeting my husband in my mid-20s was a huge, you know, shift, because now I had a partner for life who also wanted what I wanted, which is to become holy and to raise holy children. And so that was, though, those years before that happened, that was a struggle. And I can always sympathize with those who say we need more young adult ministry in the church, particularly to those who have not yet found their vocation or found a spouse, because, you know, those Christian friendships are hugely important. It's very difficult to go it alone, and Jesus didn't mean us to. He wanted us to go out into the world two by two, surrounded by friends, surrounded by support.
Right. Now, that makes perfect sense. I can attest to what you're saying, because I used to volunteer at a mission for 4 years, and I was around all the people I was volunteering with were practicing Catholics and very into their faith.
Right.
And so, like, at this point in time, though, I work at a hospital, which is a really good hospital, but it's not a Catholic institution. People there are different faiths and stuff. And I noticed the struggle became so different for me. Like, I took something very for granted when I went from working in a very Catholic, God-centered setting to a setting where people are all across the board when it comes to faith. I noticed, and I didn't realize that was going to happen. And when it did happen, I was like, wow, I didn't realize how spoiled I was, you know. So, and you don't realize how much you need it either. You know, sometimes I don't know if I would say it would be like a pride, but we think we got this. And then, like, when you're not around a group of people constantly supporting you and calling you on the holiness, you're like, oh, I don't have this. You know, I need so much more help than I ever realized, you know.
That's right. Yeah.
May I ask who your favorite saint is?
Yeah, so I always struggle with that, but I guess I would say, I mean, I feel like the Blessed Mother's in a category on her own, so she's got to be, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, aside from the Blessed Mother, I think I've gone through different stages in my life, and I wrote about 6 saints in My Sister's Saints and another 7 in The Heart of Perfection, all of whom have had huge impacts on me, and there are more still. But one I always return to is Thérèse of Lisieux. Because I find she's a real deceiver when you first meet her. I don't mean in a negative way, but when you first meet her and you read her works, they sound a little flowery, maybe even a little superficial. And then you go back a few years later and reread it and you find more depth. And then you go back and you find something new. And I find I can always go back to Thérèse and find more. She's very deep. She's a doctor of the church. But with a very, almost a girlish style in her writing that can kind of trick people into thinking there's not as much to her as there is. So there's a lot to Thérèse, and I always tell people to go back and reread her, because her little of spiritual childhood, of trust and love, is really, to me, the key. It sums up the gospel so well, what we're called to do and to be, especially in this time. And you know, she was writing more than 100 years ago, but she was writing into, I think her spirituality that she articulated, which again is just from the gospel, but it's her way of articulating it, is very much speaks to the issues of our day. You know, Mother Teresa of Calcutta, who had a very different life story, she always made it clear that the saint who inspired her, the one she took her name from, was, she liked to say, the little Teresa, Thérèse of Lisieux. And she had a very different life. She had much more active than Thérèse of Lisieux out there in the streets, you know, in the public eye. But she had that same spirituality. And I've seen so many people, from John Paul the Great to, you know, to a Mother Teresa, to just ordinary folks you meet. I mean, you can go to almost any church anywhere around the world. You can find something of Thérèse there. She's very beloved because I think her way of explaining what we're called to do, and her focus on God's mercy and His grace, as opposed to us kind of white knuckling it to holiness, is just very much what we need to hear today. All of us, even those of us who take our faith very seriously, sometimes end up thinking this is something we've got to achieve on our own. And she's great for reminding us that it's about what God does in us, not what we do for God.
That's so contrary to American culture, I think. You know, like our success in the spiritual life is how much we let God do there.
Right.
Not at all what not anything of what we do, really, you know.
That's right. That's right. Yes. And also forgiving ourselves when we recognize our weakness, our mistakes. Oh my gosh, I did that again. I still do that. You know, it's helpful not to take, in a sense, she reminds us not to take ourselves so seriously, that you can be making progress in the spiritual life and still not feel like you've got it. And probably if you think you've got it, it's the one time you really need to be worried.
You definitely don't.
Right.
Yeah. Wonderful. Thank you for letting us in on that secret, who your favorite saint is. I love the saints too. I enjoy reading about them so much. You know, they're like siblings kind of, in a way.
Yes. You know? Yes.
So if you don't mind us switching gears a little bit, I just want to jump into a little bit about one of the most recent books that you wrote is called The Heart of Perfection. Jerry mentioned it in the beginning. Would you just give us a little sneak peek about that book?
Sure. So as I mentioned before, the New Faithful, my first one, was chronicling this movement toward a more orthodox, robust faith that I was seeing among young Catholics and young evangelicals at the time. That was some years ago now. And then My Sisters the Saints was my own spiritual journey, especially through my father's Alzheimer's and my own infertility and these women saints who helped me. The Heart of Perfection, the most recent book, is a specific struggle that I face with the women saints and men saints, actually, both. In fact, it might be more men than women in that book. Specifically helped me with perfectionism, spiritual perfectionism. So we hear a lot about perfectionism. I think we all know what that is. We all know it's not good. But I think we don't give enough attention to the idea of spiritual perfectionism, how in the spiritual life we can bring perfectionist ideas and an insistence on control, on running the show, on doing everything perfectly, and being furious with ourselves and frustrated with God when we can't, and all of these things that masquerade oftentimes in the lives of faithful Christians and faithful Catholics as virtue, but they're not virtue. In fact, they can become impediments to growing in holiness, and it can actually be, I would argue, the biggest obstacle to truly experiencing intimacy with Christ and growing toward real holiness is when we're trying to do it ourselves, do it on the power of our own will. Mm-hmm. And so as I kind of started to recognize this in myself, mostly with the help of becoming a mother, I had four children in a little over 4 years, including a set of twins, and I quickly discovered that I'm not perfect. I'm not even close. And my sort of like white knuckle, just work harder, 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 like I did in my career. It just didn't work with motherhood. That wasn't really, it's not that kind of thing. And motherhood exposes all of your own wounds and your weaknesses. It also, you know, you don't really want anything more in life than you want to do this well, right? But you can't just do it well on the strength of your own willpower. So, so I began to recognize this in myself, and I became curious as I read the lives of the saints, you know, were they encouraging the perfectionism that I thought I was reading in them in my 20s? Or were they actually struggling with this and could help me find a way out? And so I found the latter was the case. And saints from Benedict of Nursia to Ignatius of Loyola, Therese again, I learned a lot from her that I hadn't noticed the first few times I'd read her, Alphonse of Liguri, all sorts of different saints had struggled with different versions of spiritual perfectionism, and it was only when they let go of it, when they recognized it, let go of it, and started leaning more into God's grace, that they started to grow into these great saints that we know, that sometimes we beat ourselves up because we're not like them. And it was just interesting to me that it wasn't beating themselves up that got them where they were. It was precisely when they stopped beating themselves up and started just turning it over to Jesus and saying, all right, I have these weaknesses. How will you help me grow, and how can I learn to trust you in the meantime while I am, you know, an imperfect work in progress? And so reading their works and telling their stories is basically what that book is. It's interweaving my own story with their stories and all the different facets that spiritual perfectionism can take, whether it's rigidity, scrupulosity, fear, anxiety, whatever. And how these different saints dealt with those and emerged triumphant precisely by sort of doing the opposite of what our culture tells us to do in the face of those things. And so I just found it so liberating that I wanted to share it, and so that became my next book.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah, and I've been getting to read that book, actually, because I just saw you not too long ago in June and was able to get a copy of the book. And it's wonderful. So I would recommend anybody out there to get it. Like, I don't know anybody that I don't think could use reading the book, to be honest with you. So,
thank you. Sometimes when I say it's perfectionism, people say, oh, I'm not a perfectionist. You should see my house, what a mess it is. Or, oh, you know, I got that straight C's in school. I couldn't be a perfectionist. But it's not like that. All of us have some area where we're hanging on a little too tightly to control, where we don't trust, where we're trying to, you know, we have sky-high expectations of ourselves that we really can't meet without letting go and letting God. So there's an area, I think, where all of us can benefit. And the saints are a good example of this because, you know, they had very different stories, these ex-perfectionist saints. So it wasn't as if there's just one way this manifests. So,
Right. I think, well, and I love you had, in the one part of the book you're talking about, you know, what do we need to surrender to trade our preoccupation with the world's standards for single-minded focus on God? And you talked about St. Francis for that one. I highly enjoy St. Francis.
I love St. Francis of Assisi, too. Yeah, he's terrific. He's and Francis de Sales. I guess they're both Francises are in there. So I didn't get Xavier in there. So.
So one last question just to kind of close out. We're coming to the end of the program here, Colleen, but what would you, if you could think of something off the top of your head that maybe, you know, pursuing God in your life, you know, living out your Catholic faith, what's maybe something that's happened in your life that you never would have expected, but you feel like pursuing God, following Him, trusting in Him, you've ended up doing something you maybe never thought you'd ever do or you never thought you could do?
Yeah. Oh, gosh, there's so many things that fit that description. There's some, you know, I guess maybe the most obvious would be that I had a very career-focused life for many, many years, and I'm now homeschooling my four kids. I still write, and I'm still working on another book. I still go and speak, which is when I met you at the recent Scranton's Women Conference. So I'm not, like, retired or anything, but obviously my focus is more on my children in these years, and that wasn't something I pictured. But, it, you know, it's funny. You know, when God gets a hold of your heart, he does really awaken in you, I think, desires that have always been there, but you didn't know they were there. I mean, the little things. I live on the coast of California, a few blocks from the ocean, and that was something I always wanted to do, and I didn't. But, you know, I was a little bit scared because I was always focused on, you know, the next step on the career ladder, and is that practical? Again, there was a little bit of the perfectionism of it's not practical. Mm-hmm. And this was a move my husband and I made a few years ago in the middle of COVID that was very much a trust leap, but we really felt God calling us here to this community. To be lighted in a place where there's some great people and there's also a lot of cultural challenges. That's something I think deep down I kind of always wanted to do, but I was too scared. And even the kind of writing I've moved. I'm very much I'm in the midst of something that I can't quite lay out because I'm still trying to figure out what it's becoming. But it's much more creative and focused on beauty than simply the true and the good, which are very important. But I think in this culture, we also need to lead people by way of beauty to God.
Right,
and indulging in that creativity and trying to use that creativity to evangelize is, again, something I think I deep down always wanted to do but kind of didn't have the nerve. So in each of those cases, I'm doing something I wanted to do, but I think I would have been too scared without God really leading me by the hand and challenging me to step out of the boat and come into the deep and trust that he's leading me somewhere beautiful.
Yeah, and it's amazing. I think sometimes we think when we surrender our lives over to God that it's going to be pretty dreary and tough the whole way. But God surprises you. You know, some of those desires of your heart that even seem like maybe like small, like
yes,
near the ocean, you know, or like that might seem insignificant that we think God might not care about that. He sometimes surprises us with that. So
he really does. And I found that over and over that I think we tend to assume he thinks like us and happily, wonderfully, he's so much bigger and better. So
thank God.
Right.
if it was in the world was in our picture and image, it would be a pretty rough go of it. So
but, right.
Colleen, thank you so much for coming on. It's wonderful speaking with you. And Colleen, real quick, do you have a website or something that you can give to us so people could check out your books or
maybe
see where you're speaking or anything like that?
Yeah, it's colleen-campbell.com. So colleen-campbell.com. And I'm on Facebook and Twitter, not that often, but I'm there. I try not to be on social media too much, but I do have the website, and that's a great portal to everywhere else I am.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much. And, you know, Colleen, thank you from the bottom of my heart for all that you've done to serve the church and to serve your brothers and sisters in Christ, including me. Thank you for that. And all right, you too. God bless you all. Bye now and have a good week.